Hello there, Bill.
Hello there, Bill.
How are you doing this week?
Doing all right. The world continues. the era of Republican domination of Washington is over, but tomorrow was another day. Today is also another day, and other days will continue on apace. And it'll be interesting to see what those successive days bring, I guess.
Do you have a twinge of positivity for the history of the moment?
Oh sure. I probably told friends. I have a lot of liberal friends and a lot of not all of them were even Democrats until this year. They decided, well, now I'll be a Democrat for Obama. And I think the historic moment, which I guess you're alluding to, is that we have our first African American president. And I think I said on more than one occasion that, you know, if that was like the only issue in a campaign, heck, I'd vote for Obama for that. As somebody wrote this week, you know, Americans like to show that they're not racist, I guess. They like to show their racial enlightenment, and maybe I would say that we're well past that. You know, I didn't vote for Obama for reasons that had everything to do with his actual policies and, you know, where he would take the country. And so while the politics the actual policies kept me from voting for him, that does not, however, keep me from appreciating, you know, the fact that this was no doubt an important moment for the country. I just wish, as I also said, if only Barack Obama was an economic libertarian.
Well, the advancement in my mind, and I think this is a general liberal view, if not shared across the ideological spectrum, the advancement is in having a election that is judged on the merits and not by the superficiality of skin color
exactly.
Of the name. As much, I think, you know, the primary mm-hmm. was a success for feminism, that Hillary Clinton was judged. She was seen mm-hmm. as a potential commander in chief. She was not held back by her gender in the end, in my opinion. That is a cracking of the glass ceiling.
Yeah, that was good too. And yes, I you could say that I rejected Obama because of the content of his prospective policies and nothing to do with his skin color or really even his character exactly. I don't think he's a bad character. Just wasn't the guy that I not with the policies that I would like to see in place.
Well, before we press on into our traditional the week in blog review, why don't you introduce yourself again to Blogging Heads, as you are a occasional guest blogging head, but otherwise might not know your full background.
Sure. My full background could take a while, so I'll give you a thumbnail sketch. I'm an innovation manager at a company called New Media Strategies. It's based in Washington, D.C. We do online political consulting. Worked for the Fred Thompson campaign in a small capacity last year. Before I got into internet and consulting, I was a journalist for the short early period of my career, where I worked at National Journal's Hotline and wrote the Blogometer, which the regular right hand side of the screen, Con Carroll, also wrote. And in sixth grade, I got I won't share that anecdote. That was whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's always good to have you here, and myself again, Bill Scheer, with a Campaign for America's Future at ourfuture.org, as well as liberaloasis.com. Certainly at Campaign for America's Future, and I think elsewhere in the liberal progressive blogosphere, there's much talk about the nature of the mandate to claim a progressive mandate so we can actually enact some of the big agenda items we've been talking about for so long. My own boss at Campaign for America's Future, Robert Borisage. Excuse my hoarseness of the voice. It was a very festive evening 2 nights ago. but he blogged at ourfuture.org as well as Huffington Post. Quote, governed from the center, Americans voted overwhelmingly for change. And to be successful, Obama will have to be bold. In reality, the center has moved. Wall Streeter Robert Rubin is now for a large deficit finance fiscal stimulus. Conservative Security and Exchange Commission Chair Christopher Cox now tells us self-regulation doesn't work and calls for re-regulating the banks. Alan Greenspan admits his ideology blinded him to reality, or at least that he got it wrong. We're all populists now, says Will Marshall, a leader of the Democratic Leadership Council, the Wall Street wing of the Democratic Party. Even the best presidents need to be pushed to act. Even the most calcified Congresses can be driven to move. The best of the New Deal, Social Security, the Wagner Act, fair labor standards that gave us the weekend, came not from Roosevelt's first 100 days, but 2 years later. That was driven in part by an active and mobilized labor movement and by the growing political threat posed by the populist left that gave Roosevelt both reason and excuse to move. I agree with you, Roosevelt repeatedly told labor's Sidney Hillman, now go out and make me do it. That was a sentiment that was echoed by Digby at her blog Hullabaloo. And in coupling with that, there's been a pushback led by David Sirota and others to push back on this pundit-driven notion that this is a center-right nation despite Obama's victory. Think Progress had a collection of various comments along those lines. So there's this active effort to define this as a progressive mandate, and how do you think the conservative blogosphere is responding to that?
This is the conservative blogosphere is not yet responding to this, and my guess is that they won't. My guess is that they won't get into it too much. But I have a question for you, I guess, and that is, if this is not a center-right country, then what do you think it is?
Well, I think there's been a progressive majority established for a long time, even if there is there has been a skittishness about the liberal label, obviously one that I embrace myself, like a liberal oasis. Campaign for America's mm-hmm. Future has defined itself as a progressive organization. I don't want to get into the semantic right. battle. I noticed at mm-hmm. Powerline.
Yeah.
Let me find that poster. I got blog posts scattered all around. There's a lot out there to try to...
So do I.
Try to sift through. So Paula Powerline wrote, this election leaves me more doubtful than ever that America still is a center-right country. In my view, center-right countries don't provide decisive margins to victory to left-wing presidential candidates, even when they present themselves as only a bit left of center, as Obama did. However, Kellyanne Conway's post-election polling convinces her otherwise, and then he quotes Kellyanne Conway. It says, last night was a decisive victory for Barack Obama, but also a decisive victory for conservatism. Our post-election polling reveals no embrace of liberalism in this country. Fundamentally, Americans continue to prefer a limited government, restrained judiciary, fiscal discipline, and traditional values. And then she goes on, in two self-identification questions, just 33% of actual voters said they considered themselves Republicans, but 41% thought of themselves as conservatives. On the other end of the spectrum, 39% align as Democrats, but only 20% of their ideological alignment as liberal, unchanged from 2004. Now, that may provide some sense of comfort to conservatives, but it strikes me as a real fundamental misreading of the data, very much focused on the liberal label and not on the policies that we would consider to be liberal. You look at the exit polling data. By an 8-point margin, 51-43, voters said they want government to do more and not less. I think that's the biggest one overall. Mm-hmm. Secondly, this is from McCain's own polling. This is a blog post that I did today. According to McCain's internal polling, more than 60% considered Obama to be a liberal and voted for him anyway. I mean, not everybody, of course, but obviously a good chunk of that's going to be conservatives. But obviously there's a right. a pool of self-described moderates in that 60% that voted for mm-hmm. Obama knowing full well he was getting. I've seen other conservative posts saying Obama camouflaged himself and generally run as a liberal. Well, even if that were true, obviously Obama didn't embrace the label liberal. This would be my third point. Obama very clearly ran on public investment, guaranteeing health care for all, calling health care a right in the second debate, attacking global warming, investing in clean energy. He used the word government mm-hmm. in a positive context more than any Democratic presidential candidate has in 20 years. So all the underlying elements of what being a liberal is in the modern age were clearly evident in Obama's rhetoric. A clear contrast in terms of regulation versus deregulation in particular. So to argue that there's no mandate for that direction of the country, to hang your hat on, well, most people don't call themselves liberal when given a choice of labels to don, that strikes me as really, really delusional as far as how the conservative movement should regroup from here, how they should approach the country, the sort of mystery where the country is at. I think this is a clear vote for having an active government again. And that's not to say there isn't skepticism of government that remains.
I think there's a bit of overreaching already in the interpretation of what this means. For example, you mentioned the David Sirota. You know, Sirota. You know, he's got this center right nation watch, where he's cataloging every time a pundit mentions that the country is a center right. And what does he write? In this case, he's going after, is it Peter Shane? I forget. I've forgotten his first name for the moment. Doug Shane, that's what it is.
Oh, Doug, the Mark Penn's pollster partner.
That's right. He writes, laughably, Shane contradicts himself in a span of two sentences, quoting from Shane, saying a Democratic victory on Tuesday will mean no mandate for Democratic policies, even while admitting an Obama election would be a, quote, wholesale rejection of conservatism. That's like saying the 1980 election was a rejection of liberalism, but not an embrace of conservatism. And I tell you, I think that David Sirota has far too binary a view of this. He's right a bit later in that post when he says that Americans' voting options are largely binary, since third parties and protest votes are, you know, fairly limited. But in terms of the way one actually sees a candidate and a politician and what they want them to do is far from being a binary thing. They voted for Obama, I think, for two reasons, I think, here, that really the two things that they voted for, far different from the list that you gave. The first one is simply a lack of competence from the Republicans' ruling of the past 8 years. That's probably the thing that I heard the most from people who considered themselves moderates and who had decided to vote for Obama. The Republicans had damaged their own brand. And I think there's a possibility that they damaged the notion of that they damaged conservative policies by association. I think with the right quality of leadership, people are not opposed to them, but this was the gang that couldn't shoot straight for about 8 years, it seemed. And Barack Obama ran a pretty solid campaign. He always seemed to be fairly calm, far calmer than McCain was. If you want a steady hand at the till, then Obama seemed to be that guy, and McCain didn't. So that's one thing. I think a lot of times the ideological, conservative versus progressive issues are not so much what drive people's voting behavior. My second point, I'll start with a question to see if you are maybe on the same page here. If you had to name one Obama policy position, domestic policy position, right now, that was certainly known in the last month of the campaign, what would you say that was?
Bringing back regulation, I thought, was very big. To go away from a deregulation philosophy. I think Obama drove that very hard in the first debate, and if memory serves, I believe in all three. But that was his main response to the financial crisis, which was a seminal moment of the general election campaign, was, I believe in regulation. McCain's been a deregulator his whole political career. That's a pretty big philosophical contrast.
Okay, that wasn't mine. We could definitely get back to that. The thing that I think I noticed the most was his middle-class tax cut. Barack Obama said, just about also in every debate and on the stump, and said often that you were going to get more money back than under Obama's tax plan than under McCain's tax plan. And I have friends who are not terribly politically active, or they get interested right around Labor Day or thereafter, or each election year. And if they were looking at their own self-interest, Barack Obama was going to give them, it seemed, more money back than they're going to get from McCain. So you could say, and as Lanny Davis did in the Wall Street Journal just today or
every liberal's
ago.
Best friend, Lanny Davis.
Lanny Davis, and he was arguing that this could be the start of a new time in politics, a new Democrats running the government for years and years. Here's Lanny Davis. This is a man who defended the right to gun ownership under the Second Amendment, who arguably ran to the right of McCain on broader-based tax cuts for the middle class, who defied his left purist base by supporting the president's terrorist surveillance program, who talked of pay-as-you-go fiscal policies aimed at restoring balanced budgets, who insisted to black audiences that black men take more responsibility for their families, and who talked boldly of aggressive military action in Pakistan to take out al-Qaeda and bin Laden. I tell you, this is one reason why Obama won, why he was acceptable, is because not only was he not like the old Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton-style politician, he wasn't like the Al Gore, John Kerry-style politician. How many lefties have I seen in the last couple of days saying, it was a good thing that John Kerry didn't win in 2004, because then we wouldn't be having Barack Obama right now. Obama ran as a new kind of Democrat. He ran a brilliantly executed campaign, and so he was able to make that case convincingly. And all of the policy things that you ticked off earlier, I do believe that Obama does want to do those, but the vast majority of people who voted for him probably aren't even aware of them.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. But to go back to Lanny's point there, I think there's a lot mm-hmm. of a lot of misdefinition in that list that he gave. Let's speak specifically to tax cuts. I would agree. Post-debate, maybe third debate and beyond, because McCain was making so much about tax cuts after the third debate, that became a dominating issue. I don't think it's accurate to say that middle-class targeted tax cuts in times of recession are a fundamentally conservative position. You might say conservatives might agree with it. You might say it's something that there would be common ground on. But that's not something mm-hmm. that I think is inherently a non-liberal position. And the way Obama defended and characterized it under attack from the right, because McCain, of course, was attacking it and saying that it was a redistributionist socialist policy. When Obama was talking about it with Joe the Plumber, and Joe mm-hmm. the Plumber said, "Well, I don't want tax cuts just going to the middle class. I want a flat tax." And Obama said, "Well, I want a progressive tax structure to spread mm-hmm. the wealth around." And that is Obama's words. He was making the argument for fundamentally a progressive tax structure where wealthy mm-hmm. people have earned more than $250,000 a year, pay a larger share in taxes than the middle class. And the structure of the policy was a tweaking of the current system to make it slightly more progressive. So I don't accept the notion that Obama was running to the right in that debate.
But he wanted people to have that impression. He ran on tax cuts for most people. And sure. most people don't make over $250,000 a year. Most of them make well less than
did
that.
You hear any, did and, you hear any conservative say, "Hear, hear, Barack Obama, thank you for embracing the conservative position on tax cuts"?
Yeah. That definitely. The Wall Street Journal, certainly a friend of tax cuts, ran an article yesterday. It might have been an editorial, actually, that I think they called tax cuts the winner of the election.
That's a little bit of revisionist history. I mean, let's keep in mind here, Obama is not running on a conservative tax cuts all the time mm-hmm. and no public investment, shrink the government, starve the beast philosophy. The tax cut position was in context of talking about having tax cuts for the middle class because they need a break, but making sure we still raise enough revenue to have robust public investment. So the overall vision is still very much a progressive one. And that's not something that the Wall Street Journal is going to embrace.
So what Obama is talking about in his tax cut is certainly far from the Wall Street Journal and supply side conservative point of view on taxes. However, Obama definitely has acknowledged that tax cuts are popular, and that is why he played it up in the campaign. This is why, as our friend Con Carroll at Heritage was making the point over the past few days I've got this backwards a little bit. So in Obama's TV ads, he has been claiming that a scholar at Heritage, supported his tax plan and said that it would be better for the middle class overall than John McCain's. And that was based on a misquotation from the New York Sun. And the Heritage Foundation, put out press releases, and Kahn blogged about it on their Foundry blog, saying this is a false claim in the Obama ad. He should stop running the commercials. Let's see. And
to take Heritage at face value, it's still the conservatives were saying we don't embrace Obama's tax plan.
Are you saying you don't believe Heritage when Heritage describes what its positions are?
I mean, if Heritage is saying now Obama is misquoting us,
yes,
I assume they're saying it because we don't want the world to believe that the paragon of conservative think tanks supports Obama's tax plan. We do not think Obama's tax plan is a conservative one.
No. I mean, wait, say the last part again?
I'm assuming Heritage is trying to communicate to the world that mm-hmm. they, as conservatives, do not support Obama's tax plan.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And they asked him to remove the ad, and the ad was not removed, which I think goes to show that Obama was definitely trying to leave voters with the impression that he was somebody who would cut their taxes.
That's true, but it doesn't mean he's supporting. But that saying that in of itself,
it never said he was going to support
a conservative position.
It never meant he was going to support the full conservative Republican, tax policy. What it did show was that he had, he'd acknowledged a central point of tax cuts being good and being popular, had found a middle position. He'd taken away from Republicans part of what was popular and left behind the more extreme anti-tax policies and taken just part of it, enough to claim the mantle of being a tax cutter. And so,
Heritage Foundation grievously oversimplifying the position. I think this might be a problem for conservatives moving forward. In conservative mm-hmm. world, for the last three decades, they mm-hmm. have a binary view: tax cuts good, tax increases bad, which is not mm-hmm. how tax policy is actually structured. There is a liberal view, progressive view, that we need to have a fair tax system, a progressive tax system that still raises revenue so government can function well and do the things that people ask for. And there are circumstances when tax cuts will make sense, and there are circumstances where tax increases will make sense. So to say that Obama is embracing the tax cut mantle is to put him mm-hmm. in this very in this straitjacket, which he himself is not putting himself in, and that is not his view of how taxes should be handled. Which is why I would argue that mm-hmm. the most of the polling, Obama was winning the tax argument. Who do you trust to handle taxes? Obama was beating McCain, even though in the exit polling, most people thought Obama was going to raise their taxes. It's not even true, but people believe that.
First of all, I want to say I think you were being overly reductive about conservatives' point of view on taxes.
Okay.
Because you definitely have – what you were describing is a kind of Larry Kudlow-type supply-sider who is cut taxes, starve the beast all the time, every time. And the problem is, as we found, when you starve the beast, sure, you can cut taxes, but you can't seem to manage to cut spending along with it. And that's why we had this era of borrow-and-spend Republicanism. I think we definitely are going to need a more nuanced view of tax cuts going forward. And the problem is that the problem for conservatives in this regard is that we've already achieved so much of what we wanted. If you go back to the 70s, when there were the truly confiscatory tax rates well above 50%, and now even the people at the top of the ladder pay under 50% of their revenue, or sorry, of their under 50% of what they make in taxes, as it should be, I would add, and. Now their taxes are low enough to the point where they are not the main concern of most Americans. Republicans have won and succeeded on taxes. However, it is not a bottomless well to which you can keep going back and drawing more water out of. The Laffer curve and supply side economics gets a bad rap because of its extremists. But Arthur Laffer, the man who came up with the Laffer curve on which supply side economics is based, He was on Bill Maher just a couple weeks ago, and you know, even he is, you know, the man is an academic, and as I'm sure he'd point out to you, it describes a curve, and this curve goes down on one side and down on the other with, you know, it's the curves. And we are past the point where, I believe, we are past the point where tax cuts would meaningfully add to the money that the government is pulling in. I think we're past that point, and we're certainly past the point of it being a huge election winner for Republicans. It worked for Obama because it showed that he was more moderate and different from past Republicans, from past Democrats. And I think it's an issue that Republicans can't count on to win, just the way they couldn't count on crime to help them after crime rates fell during the 1990s.
Do you want to take this moment to shift into a fresh topic of where conservatives go from here, or do you want to talk about the blogging on Obama office politics?
Let's do the office politics first, and then let's go towards where Republicans go next, or conservatives go next.
Well, the number of areas that's the things that are percolating in the liberal blogosphere on Obama staffing his new administration. Things are getting very heated on the prospect of Larry Summers as Treasury Secretary, even since you and I traded some links. You have Talking Points memo giving three reasons why Larry Summers shouldn't be there, partly because he was part of Clinton-era deregulation. You have Max Blumenthal on the Huffington Post digging up information on Larry Summers from the early 90s, calling Africa underpolluted and arguing for putting additional pollution into Africa. And you have Matt Stillard, Open Left, now starting an anti-Summers petition. So that's the first real organized activity to try to stop something in the Obama administration. We don't even know how serious Summers is being considered.
Right.
But I think it's a notable thing happening in the blogosphere. You had a certain amount of back and forth on Rahm Emanuel as chief of staff. I don't think there was unanimity on his potential appointment in the liberal blogosphere. You have Ezra Klein saying, I have mixed feelings on it. He's a brawler. Mm-hmm. He's legendary, tough, and effective, and ruthless.
You would think that Rahm Emanuel would be exactly what the Netroots would want. He is, I think you could say, a partisan pragmatist, right? He's not he's somewhat liberal, but he's a little more practical. But he is, you know, the one thing everybody knows about him is how he's tough as nails, the way he delivered that rotting fish to a pollster that had displeased him. The man is a fighter, right?
Well, I think
don't bloggers?
Well, that's the aspect I think a lot of bloggers do like. They're not as convinced he's as liberal as you just characterized him as, so they're concerned about his impact on policy. You know, the book that he put out before the 06 elections, The Plan, with DLC or Bruce Reed, was not especially liberal in the eyes of many. So that's where the concern lies. But Jane Ann.
But Netroots bloggers like to say that they too are not that ideological, that they, you know, that they're not. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking that too far.
I don't think you could broad brush that. You know, there are some folks that are like that. There are some folks that are definitely concerned about philosophy and policy. And certainly as we move forward, I think those voices are getting louder. Because now in the Obama era, it's going to be all about policy and getting things done. And so Ezra Klein goes on to say, of course, Emanuel won't be setting priorities. He'll seem to be advising Obama while he sets priorities, then working to carry them out. If Obama says the administration should do universal health care, which Emanuel has not been very warm to, then Emanuel will do it. And that's probably exactly why the sort of ruthless political fighter you want in service of that project. But it's also possible he'll work to persuade Obama not to do universal health care and to take a dimmer view of the potential for change, reform, and improvement. So that's where
this tension is. Yeah. I'm a bit surprised by the choice of Emanuel. I don't get the impression that he is necessarily loyal to Obama first. You know, I think I'm surprised he would take the position, considering that it seemed like he wanted to be Speaker in a few years. And I'm assuming that Nancy Pelosi will probably take the party too far left and incur some losses, and then Emanuel would have the opportunity. So that seems to me to be I'm surprised that Emanuel would do it. But then that's whatever. Apparently, you know, he's made his decision already.
It's hard to tell a president no.
Say again?
It's hard to tell a president no.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. I'm surprised there has not been more opposition to Rahm Emanuel, especially from you mentioned Matt Stoller earlier. Back in September of 06, I think, Matt Stoller wrote a post called "Rahm Emanuel is a Bad Man." And he was upset about Emanuel being open to courting money from Wall Street, which apparently people on Wall Street are bad people as well. And in that same post, he wrote, "Rahm Emanuel is a stupid, corrupt man." And as happens often with a lot of posts that Matt Stoller writes, even the commenters came back and said, "Oversimplifying things, you're wrong about this." And less common is where Stoller will actually update the post. And in that headline of the post, if you look at now, he's crossed out "bad man," and so now it says Rahm Emanuel is unwise, which seems to be not what he was really thinking about, but was doing a little bit of damage control. Rahm Emanuel, just, you know, yeah, I'm surprised that I'm surprised that the petition is about Summers, not about Emanuel.
Well, it's the post and the comments you mentioned there, you know, it is an example of, liberal blogs is not a monolith, as I'm sure the conservative blogosphere is not either.
True.
There's a range of views about these things between issue positions and strategy and tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the liberal blogosphere, like much of the progressive movement, there's gear shifting right now. The entire existence of the liberal blogosphere has been in the Bush era, where it's constant opposition. And now mm-hmm. there are decisions that they made and strategic viewpoints to establish to what degree are we trying to advance policy ideas, what degree are we trying to push mm-hmm. the Obama administration to either follow through on positions that have been taken in the campaign or to go even mm-hmm. bigger and bolder than what was said in the past, and mm-hmm. to what degree are you actively opposing things that are going on.
I have a question for you. What kind of camps do you see forming among the liberal blogosphere, you know, going forward? Obviously, President Obama will do some things that the Netroots don't like. He's already proven his capacity to do that by supporting FISA, or rather, you know, already the details of that have escaped me, even though it was in this room a few months ago we were talking about it. But of course, you remember that, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So obviously, Obama will do things the Netroots don't like. How do you think, what kind of camps do you think will form, and where do you maybe see different bloggers going?
I think it's way too early to talk about camps. You know, everyone is still kind of mystified by the mm-hmm. turn of events, and everyone's trying to get their own bearings.
Mystified? Are you sure?
What's up?
I think it's been clear for at least a month now that Obama was going to win the presidency.
It's still a lot for people to process. There's still a lot. You know, there's a lot of liberal pessimism that was out there. A lot of people concerned about Bradley effect, concerned about vote rigging. You know, I was not one to be mm-hmm. to push those theories, but they were certainly out there. In the victory party that I was at, and I said mm-hmm. after Ohio was called, I was like, you know, this is done. And people just still weren't ready to believe it. That's so scarred they have been from 2000 to 2004.
I mean, it was really done in Pennsylvania because McCain needed that one to have a chance of, you know, of putting the other 270. And, I understand being being careful about it. But in all realisticness, this was over a month ago.
Yes, I don't disagree with you. But I don't think the blogosphere has been quite preparing for the past month what to do now. People are still mm-hmm. it's still a bit of an emotional recalibration how to function from here. And mm-hmm. now we're in this area of personnel politics. It's a little easier, I think, to pick someone to oppose. And Summers, mm-hmm. as a Treasury Secretary, to answer your question, why him and not Rahm? Right. One of my reasons that Rahm got picked fast. Summers is about a specific policy portfolio to the financial crisis. So there's a specific policy reason to oppose him. You know, Rahm is more broad-based chief of staff. You might be concerned about certain policy areas, but he's not specifically mm-hmm. assigned to one. So that might also be a reason. But I can't even say to you right now that the entire blogger sphere is going to rally around stopping Summers. This just started today. It might not be something that galvanizes everybody. I don't know yet. We'll have to see. And as far as do camps form going forward, a lot of that's going to depend upon what does Obama do in those first few months? What are his policy priorities going forward, and how bold does he go? I think people are trying to decide to what degree should they be helping Obama or pushing Obama or outright opposing Obama, and you might see all three going on in the blogosphere in the next few months.
I hope so.
I'm getting more water, so you talk.
Okay. Let's see. What was I going to say? Some of these I think are funny. Because another one that's come up recently is RFK Jr. being floated for either Secretary of the Interior or the one that everybody, I'm seeing lefty bloggers and liberals upset about, is for EPA administrator. Two blog posts. One we didn't discuss prior, but it was at the New Republic. Jason Zengerle wrote a short post just saying, "Really, this guy, the guy who wrote this link." And or as David Roberts in a post that I know you have read wrote, this is about the potential of Obama appointing RFK Jr. to EPA. "It might please Clinton, Hillary, and Kennedy, Ted. It might please them, but my count is it will piss off just about everyone else. Enviros are still pissed off about his opposition to Cape Wind. Sensible people are pissed off about his naive acceptance of the phantom vaccine autism connection. Many journalists are pissed that his overheated work on Republican vote theft in 2004 served to discredit more modest but verifiable theories. He's also, to put it bluntly, widely considered kind of an arrogant jerk." So there's that. I think that's funny. The other one that I'm kind of like fingers crossed, is John Kerry for Secretary of State. I know that's just sort of one name among others being floated. So perhaps that name is just being floated to make people like me roll their eyes, and it's so he's kind of like he's like the bad cop, and then he'll bring in, you know, somebody that we wouldn't like too much either, but at least is more acceptable than John Kerry. I don't know. Does anybody on the left want John Kerry to be Secretary of State?
I haven't seen any commentary on that. I did see Jane Hampshire in a post criticizing having Hagel or Lugar as Secretary of State, saying, "Can we have a Secretary of State that is pro-choice and pro-environment?"
What does abortion have to do with being Secretary of State?
You could certainly make that argument who cares if they have conservative positions that we don't like? That's not going to be their portfolio as Secretary of State. If they're going to advocate a more progressive, realist foreign policy under Obama's direction, who cares? My guess is that what Jane is concerned about and others might be is, let's have... We don't need to prop up and have some Republican faces to show that progressives and Democrats can govern effectively. That's not an essential fig leaf to have.
Right.
But there's different schools of thoughts on that. Again, that's another one where I do not know if that's going to be a rallying cry across the entire blogosphere. People might say, "Hey, Hagel's been plenty good on the Iraq War, plenty critical of the Bush administration." And that really matters.
If you wanted to annoy Republicans, yes, you could definitely appoint Chuck Hagel and draw some cries of pain from my side of the aisle. I think Dick Lugar is one that maybe I would buy that more. At least I buy Hampshire's point more about Lugar, because I think he would probably gain bipartisan support. And he's not a Republican's favorite Republican, but everybody respects him at least. So, you know, that would be he'd be acceptable. Hagel, you would, it'd be interesting. I mean, it'd be activists and bloggers would be upset about Hagel. I think the Republicans would probably, in the Senate, would sign off on him as well.
So we shouldn't go on too much longer.
Sure.
But there's definitely been a lot of rich blogging in the conservative blogosphere about where conservatives and Republicans should go from here.
Right.
How would you characterize the tenor of that so far?
Well, I think in the short term, people are focused on the upcoming the House elections. You know, the real short term, pragmatic House leadership elections. Earlier today, today being Thursday when we're recording, Roy Blunt announced that he will not be running for whip again. Adam Putnam, who is the little liked conference chairman, had already announced he wouldn't run again. Blunt, not terribly liked. Putnam, even less well liked. So those are people are happy about those. There's also discussion, you know, should Boehner be replaced? And there is definitely some strong sentiment from some camps, some quarters saying Boehner's got to go, and other people saying, who are you replacing him with? And you know, they're the typical names you've seen before: Mike Pence and John Shadegg are being floated. Pence actually is running for conference chair and is probably going to get it, and that will make I think people will like that. Boehner, you know, he's nobody loves him. You know, he's never taken an earmark, so he can say that, and that will, you know, Republicans will go nod and go, well, there you go. But he's kind of cool in a, you know, Dean Martin kind of way, you know, chain smoking in his office. Boehner, you know, he's got the reptilian, you know, kind of like leathery skin. Not reptilian, leather skin. That's what I meant to say. But there's not a whole lot really to recommend him either. The only reason why there isn't a more of a push to oust him is because there's really nobody clearly there who's ready to, who could amass the support and who would definitely do better. There's even a little bit of rumbling that maybe Mitch McConnell should be replaced in the Senate. You know, and the sentiment certainly over at Red State is, you know, hang them all, hang them slowly. You know, after two elections lost, you know, the honorable thing to do is commit seppuku. And that's Republicans are, I would say activist Republicans are upset that the leadership seems to be too complacent in their positions and would like to see, you know, would like to see some rabble rousing again, especially as they.
Again?
I would say going back to maybe like, you know, the 94 when there were, you know, strong principled stands rather than, say, the previous 8 years and specifically the delay era, which was, you know, about as far from conservative legislation as you can get.
So is there, in all of this talk about leadership changes, it seems to be the blogosphere attitude is let's get people in these positions that are even that are very conservative and even, perhaps even more combative than what the current leadership is. Is there any sense of, I mean, to go back to our tax cut discussion before, while Obama's middle class tax cuts may not be considered traditionally liberal, I could argue that, and so I could say, yes, they're not traditionally liberal, but he still grounded them in liberal principles. But there was some acknowledgement that, you know, the liberalism of the 1970s wasn't going to play, and some adjustments needed to be made to go forward and to have a big victory again. Is there any sense in the conservative movement that, you know what, there have been 8 years of conservative policies, they didn't work well. We don't have to abandon conservatism, but we have to adjust it in some way. Do we have to have some kind of discussion of new ideas here if we're going to go forward? Or is it strictly we weren't conservative enough and we have to be even more bombastic about it to win again?
Well, I mean, I think there definitely is the aspect that, you know, Republicans didn't do what Republicans said they were going to do. And so over the past few months, I've definitely seen, you know, some grave dancing on the part of liberal pundits saying that, you know, this conservatism doesn't work, doesn't exist. Even the people who advocate it can't do it. Jacob Weisberg a few weeks ago declared the end of libertarianism following the bailout. And I think there is something to be said for backing up and you know, looking at the approach to maybe the order in which certain things are pursued. You need to be able to demonstrate you know, practical results for people. And you know, I think that has been delivered in spades in tax cuts over the past 20 years. Obviously, we're at this point of diminishing returns where some of those things are still true but are no longer the most pressing issues. And so, you know, you're not going to see people fundamentally rethinking you know, certainly small government policies. In a link I didn't send along, but you might be familiar with, David Frum today was, arguing that over the past decade or so, Democrats have moved to the right on fiscal policies. You can now trust your Democrat. College-educated people can now trust their money with Democrats, whereas Republicans have moved further to the right on social issues. And these people who are affluent and college-educated don't find that Republicans reflect their more moderate social views. And I mean, I have to say, for my own politics tends to be somewhat libertarian, so I'm more of a social moderate. And I would like to see the party go that way, but I also understand that the religious members of our caucus, not our caucus, but our more religious, more traditionally conservative members of our coalition feel differently about that. And this is why I mentioned earlier working for Fred Thompson last year. You know, one of the things that I liked most about Fred Thompson's his particular brand of conservatism was his emphasis on federalism. He's the only person that I can think of in national politics in my adult lifetime that has talked about federalism as a means of making compromise between those who would like to use government to affect certain social policies and those who would like to take them in the opposite direction. And I think that somehow there needs to be – I think maybe that is the way – that social conservatives can come to see that they can have certain things, they can have increased restrictions on abortions, and they wouldn't have to allow gay marriage in say the South, which is probably where that would be, but states in the Northeast and in much of the West could make abortion more available. And they could have gay marriage, although clearly, even in California, one of the most liberal states in the country, we see that it was very, very closely fought, but gay marriage was overturned there. So this is why I say that my own politics are somewhat fairly moderate, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily. I'm about to go in circles here, where I'm going to say that federalism is the key to striking a compromise. I do think that, and
well, that would seem to solve some problems on the social issue front, as far as trying to appeal to moderates, perhaps.
Yes, and I think that when I speak of my college-educated liberal to moderate friends, they are the sort who are not that far left on social issues. They are not that far left on economic issues, but are definitely left on social issues, and people tend to vote on values. Once their pocketbook is taken care of, then they can start voting on values. And I think Republicans are in danger of becoming, as I heard somebody say the other day, an old white person's party. They that's the block that McCain won. I do think that right now the younger voters are younger people as a whole are more socially liberal than their parents' generation were. I think that kind of is going slowly in that direction. And if Republicans can't pick up people who are libertarian, there are a lot of people who are libertarian friendly without actually calling themselves libertarians. And Republicans are losing those right now. They're losing people that. Are not traditional conservative religious types.
I guess what I find strange in this is
I don't want to offend them. I don't want those people to go away. They certainly have a place in the coalition, but I think that they I want to be careful about this because I don't want to be too I don't want to like seem like I'm casting anybody out. But I think they need less of a role, I suppose. I'm conflicted as I say this, but. It's something I think about plenty is how to...
I won't parse that and put you on YouTube to be forwarded around everybody.
Thanks.
Is it fair to say that the average conservative mm-hmm. blogger probably skews younger than the Republican Party as a whole?
That's probably true. And the average conservative blogger skews more libertarian as well.
On social issues, you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely on social issues. Don't get me wrong. There is definitely a strong traditional conservative, social conservative. You know, there are those people in the right blogosphere. But then there are also. But I still think it's more libertarian. Somebody like Glenn Reynolds, who is one of the top conservative bloggers, doesn't even call himself conservative. Calls himself a libertarian. He actually, going back to gay marriage for a moment, he actually has this phrase that he likes to use about how his vision of America is where like a happily married gay couple has racks of guns in their closet. That's his kind of conservatism. And I think that I was going to mention Paterico is a Los Angeles blogger named Patrick Frey, and he actually, I forget how Proposition 8 worked. He was, I think, against it. Right, he was against it based on the underlying principle of it. He understood the argument that the courts shouldn't be making those kinds of rules, and there certainly is a fair argument to be made for that, and he acknowledged that, but on the underlying, social issue, was in favor of gay marriage.
I guess what's eluding me is one of the things that we saw today in the conservative blogosphere was a warm embrace of Sarah Palin against some of the stories that have been leaking out about her, seemingly from McCain aides that put her in a negative light. And I wouldn't think if the thinking was we have to show some moderation on social issues to appeal to younger demographics to be a plausible national party for the next generation, why is clinging on to Sarah Palin a solution to that? And why would conservative bloggers who seemingly have their ear to the ground to younger generations, more so than party elders in D.C., why are they leading the charge for Sarah Palin? Mm-hmm.
Well, with all due respect to those who are starting what's called Operation Leper, this is anybody who is criticizing Sarah Palin to the press about what happened during the campaign, we're going to put you on a list and we'll pay attention to who you work for in the 2010 cycle and we will oppose those candidates. With all due respect to those who are doing that now, I think it's an emotional response. Sarah Palin is definitely still well-liked by certain members of the conservative blogosphere. There is really a split on Sarah Palin, and I myself have over the past month or so run the gamut of opinions. When she was first chosen and she delivered the speech in St. Paul, I was in the arena for that. I was a huge Sarah Palin fan, as was everybody else around me there. And then over the next few weeks, as she proved, the Cork interview was the watershed event there. And then, of course, the $150,000, I still haven't got a clear idea of whose fault that was or why that was. But in any case, there's nothing good about that. And, when Sarah Palin was first named as VP, even before then, I mentioned her on Blogging Heads back in the summer. And, she's a reformer. She ran against Republican incumbents to take power. I think on that previous show, I said she was putting Democrats in jail, and I got that wrong. She was putting Republicans in jail because there's definitely a corrupt Republican Party in Alaska, as we saw recently with Ted Stevens being convicted. But once she got to the national stage, we saw none of that. I think she was ill-used, but I'm afraid that she was responsible for some of that. If the story is true that her palling around with terrorists line was one that she used before it was even approved by the staff. So, unfortunately, I ultimately came to the conclusion that she shouldn't have been offered it and she shouldn't have accepted it. And I won't completely shut the door on her being, somebody worth running for office in 2012, but not this version of Sarah Palin, that's for sure. So,
perhaps we should leave it on that note.
Perhaps we should. All right.
Always great to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you, too.
And have a great weekend.
You too. Talk to you later.
Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye.